Hey everyone, a quick note before the rest of this is that due to the sensitive nature of this content, I had to take the episode down and modify my guest's voice to be less recognizable. And because all the messages that I had gotten the first few days that this episode were out were very positive and were thanking me and my guest for our bravery and for our compassionate and thoughtful look into this difficult issue. But my guest's partner became too nervous that someone could find her identity and that it would make her unsafe. And so they asked me to change her voice. That was the solution that we came up with so that we could still have this episode out. But I had already mixed the whole episode, so I could really only do that by changing both of our voices. So that's why we both sound trans now. We both sound extra trans. We were already both kind of trans, weren't we? But anyway, our voices have been modified to be lower. So it's kind of ironic to change a trans woman's voice to be lower. I did not mean that as a hate crime. I did that for her safety. Anyway, so I hope that you're able to enjoy the episode and just enjoy it being kind of funny that it sounds that way on both of our ends and not even just hers. But, you know, it is very important to me that I uphold the wishes of my guests for whatever reasons, but especially when it comes to something like this, for safety. Anyway, so that's what's going on, and enjoy the episode.
Doing cosmetic surgery on infants is, like, evil, just straightforwardly. Like, I think a lot of the things that we do to kids ultimately are, like, you know, very bad. I think a lot of the things that people naively expect to help prevent child molestation or whatever are like actually just helping reify the exact social circumstances that allow it to happen. Like more people seem to be aware that more than 90% of all child molestation happens as a result of someone the kid knows, but people don't like act like they know that, you know, like it's usually dads or moms or like uncles or something like that. Ripping the kid or like, or someone who has direct parental authority over the child. Yeah. So giving parents more authority over a kid or like making kids stay more at home is not going to help with that. It's just going to make it worse. Like during the pandemic,
Oh yeah, child molestation went way up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. I gotta laugh horrendous. So I don't cry, but yeah, dude. Hello, folks. Oh, I hate the word folks. Whatever. It's fine. I can use folks every now and then. Hey, dudes, dudettes, and dudexes. Thank you so much for joining me for an episode of Politically Nonbinary, my podcast where we are politically androgynous. I am androgynous in most ways, and I'm definitely politically androgynous. And so this is my project to help people get out of their thought bubbles. A lot of y'all are, you know, pretty hardcore party line about, you know, being a man or being a woman, or about being conservative or liberal or Democrat or Republican or libertarian, whatever. And I think that's a pretty faggoty way to live, but maybe it works for y'all for the most part. It's okay. You know what? It takes all kinds of kinds. And if you're on one side or the other of all these divides, not everybody has to be as androgynous as me, but you do, I think, you need to be able to listen to the other side and therefore even improve your side of things, to think through your thoughts better. Even if you are hardcore yin or hardcore yang, you're still supposed to have that circle of white or with the black in the middle, you know. Anyway, so because of the algorithms and fucked up shit, like what's going on in our culture, everything's so polarized, it is hard for people to get outside of their bubbles in a way. And sometimes, you know, even if you want to, it's hard for you to find something that works for you. And this podcast isn't going to work for everyone. I use the word faggoty up top, you know, so if that's not for you, I don't know, but maybe give it a chance. The word faggoty is so fun. Also, I'm a faggot. I'm a faggoty faggot, so I get to use it. I think that's just fair. And anyway, so this, yeah, I have an episode here where I'm talking to a trans woman pedophile. Obviously, that's hilarious, and that's part of the appeal. I get to ask a trans woman pedophile about puberty blockers. What could be funnier? But at the same time, this is a non-offending pedophile. Let's put that straight out there, okay? This is someone who has never had sex with a child as an adult and is committed to living a life where she never will. So, and is, you know, like, and I believe her. It doesn't, it's not like she's like, oh, I'm struggling to, like, this is, she's also attracted to adults. This is something where that perspective allows her to have compassion for people who are afflicted with this attraction, especially for, you know, we all should be able to have a lot of sympathy for people who are only attracted to kids. That sounds so fucking hard. That's so horrible. That's true. You know, it's bad enough if you're attracted to men. So this, you know, I like, part of the appeal is that it's a hilarious premise to me that I get to, you know, talk to a trans woman pedophile. And, but the reality is that we have a very thoughtful, beautiful, compassionate conversation about how to improve society for kids so that they're not getting molested as much. Probably never going to be able to get it down to zero, unfortunately, but how we can help kids get molested less and how we can help the people who are afflicted with the attraction to kids, because that sucks for them too. So this is about how to improve society. And as always, the project of Politically Non-Binary is that a guest comes on and makes their case to me and as a stand-in for the audience, for all of y'all, but you're making the case to me / the world for how we could improve society, something that would be better, something that people should learn, understand, know. And then if anyone hears this conversation and thinks that we got some things wrong, whether very wrong or a little wrong, or they have a completely different perspective, then they can reach out to me and potentially come on and be a podcast guest where you then try to make your case. And then we'll listen to that. And that way we can continue to improve the conversation. So whether you want to react to this episode and you have different thoughts on how we should handle age of consent laws or children's autonomy or conversion therapy or puberty blockers, or, and let me just say, if there's one teaser that I want to put for, like, you listening to this whole episode, then I would just say you got to wait till we get to the part about what to do about puberty blockers. It is a hilarious, fascinating, and controversial section, and I've never heard anyone talking about it the way we are, so don't miss that part. Okay, but other topics that we talk about are the Catholic Church. I'm just trying to think of all the, you know, little things that we talked about. And there, you can come on and, you know, I mean, you can ask me to come on and make the case. I can't just let anybody on. Some of y'all are fucking crazy. But, or if you want to come on and respond to Freddie DeBoer's episode and you want to talk about the economy, great. Or if you have a new topic that you want to bring up, great. Those are our topics so far that you can respond to. Okay, so yeah, this episode is really fun. I think it's really beautiful. I think we have a lot of good ideas that we're exploring. It ends in a cliffhanger, and so this is the first half of the conversation. If you want to hear what happens after that cliffhanger, you'll have to join us for part two, which, why wouldn't you want to listen to part two of The Trans Woman Pedophile? Are y'all as fascinated by this shit as I am? Anyway, she found me because of Gender Fluids, my other podcast that me and a trans chick do, a trans chick who's also a comic. We have a hilarious podcast called Gender Fluids that you should listen to if you're not already. It is so funny, but it's also disgusting, so not safe for work and not safe if you are even possibly offended at all. Not just offended, like, I'm talking about, like, if you're like disgusted by stuff, like, I don't know, but read the titles of the episodes before you just dive into that. Content warning alert. Anyway, I think you're gonna enjoy this episode. I'll come back at the end to tell you more stuff, but I think that's enough rambling for me. Thank you so much for being here. I love all of you, and you know, I'm just so glad that you're not, you know, judging me, writing this off as, I don't know. It's crazy to me that some people are like, you should never even talk to someone who is attracted to kids, even if they've never done anything. Your disgust should be so great that you could never even, you should demonize them immediately and not think of them as a human being. Like, fuck you. Can we stop demonizing people who haven't hurt anyone? Thank you. Okay, enjoy. The new way of doing the podcast will be that I talk to people who are going to try to convince me / really the audience of a position on something. And so, yeah, it's like you use convincing me basically to make your argument to the world. And I will, yeah. There are things I'll push back on, whether I subscribe, even if, and this is like brings back my little wrong questions only way of thinking about this podcast, is that I wanted it to be like, I'll ask all the wrong questions. But it's like, sometimes if I'm asking a question or, you know, like questioning some premise that you have or whatever, it might be because that's my question that I have, and or it might be that I know that other people have that question. So even if it, like, it doesn't have to, I just like, I feel like it also helps the listener because you don't have to feel like as attacked, or you're, you know, that you know that like, I might not even subscribe to the question that I have, but I just want to ask the questions that
I, I mean, like, I wouldn't be doing this if I thought you weren't at least somewhat sympathetic to this, to my point of view. You know, that would just be a very bad idea for my personal safety.
Well, I think that's, but that's, it's not just like your issue. It's like also, that's why I want to do this podcast that way and have that format, is because I feel like I am especially able to be sympathetic to just about everybody's point of view, everybody's perspective, that, you know, anything that you're going to come to me with, I'm probably one, I'm already going to agree with just about everybody about some things. And I'm used to also questioning things and knowing that I'm not sure of it myself. So like, I mean, I'm trying to think, I'm sure that if anybody like listen, they'd be like, oh yeah. So if a white supremacist came on the podcast, would you be, you know, if a KKK, like, you know, a Hitlerian, I'm like, no, I mean, I'm sure there are limits to how much I'll empathize with just anyone.
There are certain viewpoints that are just sort of, they don't really have much to them. Like, I don't know. I've hung around.
But it's also like,
and they don't really seem to have much in the way of good ideas. Like even their economic ideas are just insane.
Like, yes, it is like, but I'm still happy to have someone on. If they have a sincere thing where they really are like willing to come on and talk about like their genocidal beliefs or whatever it is, like, I think two things are going to happen in every conversation. I'm going to learn some things. Whether I agree with anything or not, I'm gonna at least learn some things, but I probably will. Usually people have some good points, or else they wouldn't be have gone down some kind of path. But also then maybe I'll convince the person I'm talking to of some things too. You know, it's not like it just goes one way. So I would always be happy to have someone on if they were like, if I could find someone who's like a KKK person, and I hope I am able to, because they still have these little meetings. I'm like, I want to know what's going on in their hearts and minds and like how they present this and how they would talk to me about it and like, and hear them and see if I can't also have an influence. But I'm sure that, you know, I mean, but that's how I feel. I literally feel like I have something to learn even from someone in the KKK. I'm not exactly sure what that learning would be like. And I think they have a lot to learn from me.
Indeed. I think a lot of people join those sorts of groups mostly for the social cohesion rather than like the A-leafs, like the, you know, the racism necessarily, at least initially. I mean, they often pick it up later if they didn't initially have it, but.
Right. And isn't that so much of what's going on is people just want community. Yes. Get it where you can take it. Well, cool. Well, with that being said, do you want to introduce yourself? However you want to.
Well, you know, I'm, you know, into kids. I don't really know how much identifying information I want to give about myself, besides that I'm also a trans woman. I realized I was into kids a few years ago, and it's been strange, to say the least.
So you realized you were into kids a few years ago, you said. I know you don't want to give like identifying information, but could you give us a general age range situation for this?
Well, I realized when I was in my very early 20s, you know, and for a while after I first realized, I felt just horrible about it. You know, I didn't want to, I thought, what most people think, that, you know, if you're a pedophile, you're basically guaranteed to eventually go and hurt someone. And, you know, it took me a few years to get over that, just being terrified that I was inevitably going to do something, even though it didn't feel likely, you know. And
can I stop you just to keep everyone on the same page? When you say that you're into kids, is there an age range?
Yes. You know, I've been into people between 3 to 55. You know, I'm not an exclusive pedophile. Mostly it's a hebephilia thing, you know, like 9 to 14-ish, I would say.
9 to 14. And yes, so that one's the one that's hebephilia.
Yeah.
Do you know where that comes from, where we get these little words?
Hepa? I have no idea. I think it might be Greek or Latin.
Yeah. Okay. Just feels like it should be like people who are into Jews or something, but instead it's okay. So
dated quite a number of Jews.
So maybe you're a Heba and a Hebra fill a profile, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So yeah, so 9 to 14. So, but you're also attracted, you said non-exclusive pedophile. Yes. So like, so means you're also attracted to people who are older. Do you feel, is there a difference in your attraction?
I'm certainly more into adults. This is why it took me so long to realize I was into kids, you know, it's a lesser amount of attraction. And this seems to be the case for a lot of pedophiles. There are certainly a few people who are exclusively into kids, and I don't know. I'm glad I'm not one of them. It would be sad if I, you know, couldn't act on my sexuality at all.
Yeah, that seems really hard if you're just attracted to kids.
Yeah. Shortly after I first realized, when I was really in that self-hating phase, I had confided in a few friends about it because, you know, like I felt I had to talk to someone, and most of them were pretty okay with it, you know, not like okay, but like they reassured me, like, you know, the fact that you're so concerned means you're probably not gonna do anything.
Okay, so I think a lot of people would wonder if you're attracted to both adults and kids. It's kind of okay, and this reminds me of when you ask a bi chick why she needs to come out to her parents if she's dating a dude or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But there is, especially with this, I feel like there's another layer of like, I could see why you'd want to confide in to a few friends for sure. You know, everyone needs to confide in things, but do you feel like you wish that you could be more out about it? Or is it just like, I just wanted my three closest friends to know?
I do kind of wish I could be more out about it. I mean, like, my romantic partners have known, and, you know, I have some friends online who know and who are okay with it. My, you know, I've spoken with other people like myself about this sort of thing. And, you know, we have a few online communities within which we talk with one another about stuff. It would be nice to not be so, like, the main concern right now is just people, like, generically finding out, you know? Because that wouldn't be great for my long-term survival.
Yeah.
A very large percentage of people think that people like me should all be killed just for having the attraction.
Well, if we could guarantee that the gene pool no longer had any pedophilia in it, I could see how some people would think, like, if we could just get rid of everybody who was pedophile, then we could rid ourselves of the, you know, burden to the children as well as to the people and to the society, that we all have to be so uncomfortable around kids and things because we're all worried about pedophilia and kind of, you know, because I think a lot of people who have really strong reactions of like, let's kill all the pedophiles, are concerned about, there's a little bit of protesting too much in it, where it feels like, well, you seem a little extra, like, why are you bringing
there's this mental condition that's called pedophilia OCD. It's a kind of OCD it's a thing I had previously, wherein people who suspected that they might be pedophiles get obsessive thoughts, essentially worrying about whether or not they're a pedophile. And this can manifest in this way. There's homosexuality OCD, where people are obsessively worried about whether or not they're gay.
You can have it for anything that's discussed or taboo related. Yeah. I'm sure people have that with incest and even eating poop or anything. Yeah.
Homosexuality OCD became significantly less common as people, you know, became more accepting of gay people and stopped believing that, you know, having gay sex was inherently immoral.
Right.
I don't know.
I miss those days, but that's
I don't think we can potentially reach that point because obviously raping children is bad. I should probably say that so people don't think that I'm, you know, in favor of that. Raping children is very bad. People shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
But yes, I don't think that we can actually eliminate child molestation via just eliminating pedophilia genes, because the majority of child molesters are not actually pedophiles.
Right.
Convicted child molesters, I've seen studies saying that convicted child molesters, it's as low as like 20% of convicted mm-hmm. child molesters are actually sexually into kids. They just have like impulse control problems.
Yeah.
Just raping anyone who's near them, who they have easy access to.
Yeah, there's power stuff, there's horny stuff, there's yes. just weird, yeah.
I think in order to eliminate child molestation, it's a lot harder of a problem than just getting rid of pedophiles.
We could kill all men, and that would probably do it.
Then there's also female pedophiles, you know?
Yeah, but...
It is somewhat less common, though.
Yeah.
Certainly every pedophile that I have met has been AMAB.
I also feel like usually when adult women are having sex with younger people, it's usually older teens. Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of like Lolita stuff where the older chick is really into like the 9-year-old thing just doesn't seem, I'm not sure if I've ever seen that.
I have occasionally interacted with cis women who are interested in that age bracket, but it does seem to be significantly more rare than like epiphilia style attraction, and men are significantly more into that age bracket. Like I would say nearly 100% of all men are into like older teenage girls.
Well, but, yeah. I mean, that's one of those open secrets that no one really knows quite how to address it, but like comedians do. And so it's like, well, it makes sense. I mean, these people are post-pubertal and especially a lot of them were wearing short shorts and stuff. And, you know, we're all just kind of like, well, I don't want to get into a relationship with her. I'm not trying to like look for 17-year-olds that I could fuck, but it's just like you could still find people attractive and just be pleased. Like, you know, a lot of times it's just pleasing to see attractive people, and that's where it all ends.
Indeed. I think the problem that a lot of people have with that is that they view the attraction itself as the immoral thing mm-hmm. and not, you know, the actual act of harming a child, which it feels really crazy to me. Like the entire problem with that sort of thing is actually hurting a kid.
Right.
Whereas like just sort of passively being into older teenage girls is not going to hurt them as long as they're not like assaulting them or harassing them.
Yeah. Well, that is part of it, right? Is that some men are gross Indeed. About the way that they approach and flirt with or hit on women in general. So then if they don't have any like shame or taboo around the 13 to 17-year-old girls, then like now they're going to be all trying to flirt and hit on and harass all those chicks too, in a way that if we have that taboo there and those laws, then it does influence men to not be as aggressively creepy toward teens.
I think there are better ways of dealing with that. Lots of which just involve like empowering children more to be able to say no to adults in their lives.
Yeah.
And like to actually meaningfully escape. Like running away from home should be legal. Mm-hmm. It's insane that that's illegal. Like if I was transported back in time to when I was 8 mm-hmm. with all of the current knowledge that I have right now and all the current ability to think.
Yeah.
Like there's still nothing I could have done when I was 8 to actually get away from my abusive parents. There's nothing. Right?
Yeah.
Like there's nothing an 8-year-old can do to actually get away that doesn't involve like potentially throwing themselves into a more abusive situation in the foster care system.
Yeah. You know how you can like drop off an infant at the fire station and they'll take care of it. You should be able as an 8-year-old to like go to the fire station and be like, y'all, I actually need to get out of this house. And
I think the solution to like large-scale child molestation is mostly just letting kids leave.
Yeah. So wait, were you
they are being molested?
You were being molested as a child?
I was not personally molested as a child.
Okay. You were abused.
I was raped when I was a minor, but not by my parents or by an adult. It was by another teenager.
I see.
But I was beaten quite a lot as a kid.
Gotcha.
And you know, this was quite unpleasant.
Yeah.
Though obviously I can't speak for CSA victims. Exactly.
Child sex abuse for the listener.
Yeah. Though I do know a lot of pedophiles who I've spoken to who are CSA victims, and they also seem to have similar opinions. So I do think most of the solution to helping kids be able to avoid being molested is just letting them leave and letting them get away from adults who are trying to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
And also like right now people are like, you have to respect when people say no, but not kids. Like when I never, like you can say no to someone bad touching you as a kid, but you can't say no to like your parents sending you to speak to a priest and then them asking you invasive questions about you masturbating or not.
Yeah.
Like, which is pretty shitty. I think that you've also experienced this, right?
Yeah. I had, that's Mormon experiences.
I was raised Catholic, not Mormon.
Similar. But with the same shit. Yeah. There's some middle-aged man. Yeah.
And that's not something I think kids should have to go through if they don't want to. Kids should be able to say no to that and have that no respected.
Well, I don't know if you've heard me tell this story on Gender Fluids, but it's one that like has always, it's like this thing that stuck with me is that like, as a little kid, people were always like running around and chasing me and the other kids, but and doing what we called raspberries on my stomach. That like thing. Did y'all call that raspberries? Okay, because I found out recently that another friend of mine, their family called it spooing. And
I've never heard that one before.
I know. It's like such a disgusting, upsetting term. And it sounds very pedophilic. But at first I thought it's insane, but I actually think it's better than calling it raspberries, because if you're like, hey, this autistic teenage boy or whatever, I mean, I'm just speaking of my brother, but chased me down and spooed me, I think that the adults would have the proper amount of alarm. If you say gave me a raspberry, like it's like, you know what I mean? That language.
Yeah, it's a very different linguistic speaking about it.
Yeah, it feels like a pedophile came up with this raspberry shit. Oh, we're just going to give the children raspberries. I'm like, okay. But as a child, I have clear memories of this happening and me not wanting it to happen. And especially because I didn't want it from certain people. I mean, I remembered the attractive teens. Sure. You know what I mean? But my brother and his weird friend and I didn't want them doing it. And so that's, it's an interesting thing that I'm even thinking of it as a kid about the attractiveness, but it's like this consent was being breached. And as a child, when you're saying no, but you're also giggling because it's whatever, laughing and you're uncomfortable and it's a ticklish thing that they're doing to you with these raspberries. But adults don't take you seriously. It's an understood game that we're doing something to a child without their consent, just like you would tickle them. And that is funny. It's funny that the kid is going, no, please stop. Don't. And that all the adults are around laughing and not helping.
Yeah.
And it feels like I'm like some fucking pedophile snuck that in to our culture and groomed us all to not give a shit about children's bodily autonomy and consent. But instead to learn to laugh at them and to learn as a child that you just go ahead and let things happen to you. And maybe I'm making too much of the raspberry thing and everyone else is just like, chill with it.
This is a thing I wanted to bring up actually, is that people do not respect children's autonomy. They say that they do when they're talking about like specifically actually fucking a kid.
Yeah.
You know? But when it comes to literally anything else, they do not care at all.
Well, it's not even about autonomy really, because what we say about fucking a kid is it's illegal no matter what. And I'm not saying that shouldn't be the policy. Right. Like that's a whole,
I think there's room for nuance. Like a lot of age of consent laws are like designed in a way where like two 15-year-olds having sex is just blanket illegal, which is insane.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot of stuff could be tweaked for sure. And weirdly, a lot of the laws only became like it was like, you'd have to look that up. It's something like 2008, Canada changed their age of consent from 13 to 15 or something. Like it's only been in the past 30 years that various government countries and states, whatever, have kind of like started changing the law. It's been very rapid because people used to, have all kinds of marriages with 13-year-olds and blah, blah, blah. But hold on, I want to get in that tangent. What were you talking about? Yeah. So in terms of the age of consent, I just find it interesting because it's like, not only do we not actually care about children's autonomy in terms of
listening to what they really want about their body in all sorts of ways. But even when it comes to sex, it's not a question of their autonomy. It's that we've decided they don't have any. And so they're not able to consent to anything except whatever the adults around them have decided is fine.
I think it's possible that there should be negative consent. Mm-hmm. Like an age at which a child is able to give like legally binding no's to like parents, religious authorities, etc. Like, I don't know, that could be like 8 or 10, something significantly younger than 18, where they can just opt out of being forced into religious things, whatever nonsense their parents are trying to force them to do that like is coercive and not in their best interests, etc. Like, no. Oops.
It is weird how much parents have control over their kids in a lot of ways. Like, if you want to pierce their, I joke about how it's like, okay, so if you can circumcise your baby legally and you can pierce their ears, then are you legally allowed to give your baby a Prince Albert? Which, you know, the piercing on your dick, I don't know if you know, you can like, pierce.
People do worse things to intersex infants.
Well, it's a good point. And so, but it is one of those things where I'm like, why are we allowing people to like pierce their baby? And again, with circumcision, unless you're Jewish or something where, you know, you have an actual cultural reason to do this, like the Americans who are doing it just because that John Harvey Kellogg guy didn't like masturbation and thought it would be helpful. Like if that's like, why are we, I want my son's dick to match mine. Okay. That's a weird answer anyway, but also like your son could choose that. We have really good anesthesia.
The creepiest ones are when like adult women are like, well, I find it more attractive, so I'm going to get this cosmetic surgery on my infant son's dick.
It's right. Like, number one,
are you planning to fuck your son?
Yeah, like, we're all groomed to find the earthworm looking uncircumcised dicks weird because we're all been raised that way. I mean, I talk about, even though, you know, I'm a lesbian, in the dildo world, you know, they're all circumcised. You can't buy a uncircumcised, if you want your dildo to be uncircumcised, you have to pay for it in euros, you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna look that up.
But you actually, nowadays, in the past, I would say like 5 years, especially at nicer sex toy stores, they do have them, of course, because like, again, you can always, you know, buy them from Europe, but also even in good American stores now, there'll at least be some options, but they're mostly but then, you know, you'll have to choose between only one race instead of three, and or only one or two sizes, and it's like, it's still pretty rough out there if you really want an uncut dildo. But so it's like, I get it. I also find the cut dildos more attractive than the uncut ones, but that's just because we were raised that way, and it's like one generation of people just being chill about it, and the kids won't care anymore. And again, your child could choose that for himself.
Yeah, if I do think this, doing cosmetic surgery on infants is like evil, just straightforwardly. Like, I think a lot of the things that we do to kids ultimately are like, you know, very bad. I think a lot of the things that people naively expect to help prevent child molestation or whatever are like actually just helping reify the exact social circumstances that allow it to happen. Like, more people seem to be aware that more than 90% of all child molestation happens as a result of someone the kid knows, but people don't like act like they know that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's usually dads or moms or like uncles or something like that raping the kid. Mm-hmm. Or like or someone who has direct parental authority over the child. So giving parents more authority over a kid, or like making kids stay more at home, is not going to help with that. It's just going to make it worse. Like during the pandemic, what was it?
Rain? Oh yeah, child molestation went way up.
A fucking nightmare.
Yeah, I gotta laugh so I don't cry. But yeah, dude.
Yeah, I.
It's so fucked. All the kids were getting raped at home as soon as they heard about coronavirus and like school shit. They're like, no, and all these fucking libtard teacher union people who are like, we are never going back to work. We're never going to teach your stupid kids again. We like it that they're not watching on Zoom. Yeah, we actually want to get paid, never work again. I would love for a teacher to come on and explain to me why she shouldn't be fucking teaching kids in person. That would be great. I am very open to it. sorry for using the F word in that, but it is like particularly for kids who were getting raped at home. Just the moment when they realized, wait, how long could this coronavirus last? Oh no. Oh no. Oh shit. Their only hope is that because their mom was home too, that their stepdad or whoever, you know, wasn't going to have as much privacy during these times.
Yeah. I don't know. These things are just nightmarish to me. Like, I don't know. And so, like I said, the only way to solve that sort of thing is letting kids leave their home, letting kids escape, providing them places that they can go that aren't like
really shitty,
hidden behind like 20 layers of government bureaucracy.
Yeah.
You know, like,
or they just have a shelter where
you can just walk there.
Yeah, we need shelters.
You can sleep there.
More shelters for
and
children.
You can get food and internet access or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can just go about your life from there. You never have to see your parents again if you don't want to. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And that should be available in more places. I think that's really the only way to stop like parental molestation, because I think that's the only at least politically available way of doing that. Like, we could also destroy the nuclear family, but that's not politically viable.
Yeah, not politically viable. That's good. For starters. Yeah, but I think that's that sounds good to me. Maybe again, if anyone wants to come on and tell us why we shouldn't have children's shelters where children are allowed to just like escape. And like I said, it's like taking yourself to the fire station where you're like, dude.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing. Most kids are not going to want to do that. But
yeah,
if it's bad enough.
Then I would say that most kids are not going to want to do that. But like for the kids who do need to do that, it would be a literal lifesaver.
Yeah.
Like, I know this is another thing that bothers me about like when kids like commit suicide, people offer the parents condolences, even though more than 90% of the time it's going to be the parents' fault.
Shots fired, parents. Well, I mean, you know what? We'll just say sometimes kids kill themselves, and the parents really fault is really murky. Life is complicated, but there are people who are deeply troubled and they weren't being molested. Yeah. Sometimes parents are molesting or beating their kids or horrible, whatever.
But more than 50%, I would say. It's going to be.
I'll take your word for that.
Related to parental authority, I would say.
I mean, every time I thought about killing myself, it was always like the plan was to write a note where it's like, "Mom, it is your fault." Okay.
I mean, same.
Yeah. But that being said, everybody's flawed. Whatever. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're like, I guess as you're getting older, I just want to take a detour back to your life. As you're getting older, like when you're 9 to 14 yourself, it makes sense to be attracted to 9 to 14 year old kids, the extent you had any attraction to people, right? So then
I wasn't actually into that age bracket when I was that old. I clearly remember thinking in middle school, what the heck is wrong with pedophiles? All of my classmates are hideous.
Well, you just it was a class full of knots, you know, you needed some more knots. Maybe it's just where you went. Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
Okay, so yeah, well, that makes sense to me. So then did the attraction start to happen later? You said you figured it out early 20s. Like, what was that journey like for you in terms of coming to have that attraction and figuring it out?
Well, first it was, I got accused of being a pedophile quite a lot for arguing some of these related points, like that, it's mostly parents raping their kids, not like random strangers. It's mostly like that we need to give children more autonomy, and that like arguing that isn't like a secret backdoor into trying to have more access to kids so that I could hurt them.
Yeah. So you're talking about online, you were in some kind of political debate type stuff where.
Yeah, people would often accuse me of this sort of thing whenever I would mention it. And like, you know, I mentioned it once and then it became a reputation that I had.
So you think
sorts of communities.
So is it possible that you developed attraction to the kids because you became OCD fixated on it when people are accusing you of being attracted?
This is possible. Brains are horrid, and you know all you can do is keep moving forward.
That's a nightmare too, just for anyone with any kind of like OCD ass brain, because that is the fear, right? Like that it's for a lot of guys who are maybe homophobic, right? The fear is what if I become gay on accident because I think about it, whatever. So like if there is a slippery slope inside our own mind body systems where we could become attracted to kids, I think a lot of people, that's probably why they're like, I just want to steer so far clear of this whole topic so that I don't accidentally evolve pedophilia. Oof. I feel inoculated to it because I've been joking about this stuff for so long, and as Ava and I say, we're such pedophile bottoms that it just doesn't
see the majority of pedophiles I know are bottoms, and
I remember
mentioning how we wanted to get a pedophile bottom and just laughing. It is kind of sad.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, y'all are.
Because like there's a bunch
of beta bottom.
You know, like there's no kid tops. That doesn't exist. I mean, like if you're actually into like prepubescent kids, I mean.
Well, okay, so I knew someone in college, another non-offender, who he talked about how, you know, there's these other societies where various forms of man boy love or adult child sex stuff, whatever happened. I mean, I know there's some indigenous tribe somewhere where, or village where they're like the boys have to suck off the adult men, and then that semen is what makes the boys into men. Like, but the more semen they drink of the older men, the more manly they become. Like, there's been that. Obviously, there's whatever happened with the Greeks and Romans. I really should look into that more, considering how. Anyway, but also those civilizations like fell, and everyone talked. You know, I'm not really sure, but I know
it's interesting to me. I've definitely heard pedophiles talk about this who are more knowledgeable about history than me. We talk about how, you know, a lot of those civilizations stopped doing those sorts of things right before they fell.
Oh, okay. So it's actually. I love that.
Well, like the Ottomans stopped having lots of sex with children right before their civilization collapsed.
I see. This is late stage,
I don't think there's any connection there.
Well, or there's a lot of correlation, but not causation between any. I don't know, but I know that various forms of and it were just eight, like we've kind of hinted at earlier, the age of marriage, consent. Kind of stuff has shifted drastically over time and over different cultures. And so it's kind of this weird math we do now about a lot of things, but we've been doing like the way that we are about whether cultural appropriation, the blackface and not even just like classic blackface, but any dressing up as a black person, all those kinds of things. Wait, we've lost our collective memory about how different we all really felt about that just a few years ago. And in a similar way, I think maybe 20 years ago, we just kind of lost our collective memory about all how different everything was about children's stuff. I mean, if you look at all this, all these songs, she's 16, she's beautiful, she's mine, all kinds of stuff like that about like older men singing about young women. And then we all kind of just still sing some of those songs. We all kind of pretend that wasn't the case. There's tons of movies where the whole thing is older man with much younger woman, even if she is 16, 17, not just 18, 21 kind of stuff. Like,
this is why I don't think a Lolita movie, for example, could ever work, because like in order for it to really have the effect, you'd have to actually have an actress of the age that she's supposed to be.
You say a Lolita movie?
I never
watched the one they made, or I'm sure they made a few. I haven't seen them.
They've made a few, and you know, I think people should stop trying to make them.
Yeah.
Because,
First of all, it's
there's
Nabokov,
no way you can get across
dude.
The point.
Yeah, you're never going to be able to translate Nabokov, and especially about something like that. I mean, it's
like,
just
like In order to get the point across, you'd have to have an actress who was that age, right?
Right.
Or else it has a different feel.
Yeah.
Like, there's a big difference between someone going after, whatever, like a 12-year-old and someone going after, like, someone who's clearly 17-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just, it's very different there.
Yeah. Okay. So you have a particular attraction. Sorry, I don't know how many, I'm so bad at tangents. So if I ever abandon something that we need to get back to, because I'm always also worried about it sounding like monsters, because I feel like if we start a point and then we forget to finish it, we might not have made enough of the point for people to understand that like we're actually good.
There's lots of people who like, if they even heard that this was happening, would just blanket assume we were both evil, right?
Yeah. I just can't be bothered with people who are like going to be that close-minded. Yeah, I'm probably not for them in general. I think the tide's turning a little bit. Like I said, Louis C.K.'s latest special, Sorry, he does kind of address this stuff in a nice way that really opens up the conversation a little more around, like, can we, one, be more compassionate, and two, be more pragmatic in workable solutions instead of just this thing that we have of putting our head in the sand and going, nah, you know, all the poor Catholics. I don't know exactly what it was, but I saw some news thing going by where their Pope they love so much. Not only is he saying you shouldn't just be a dog mom or whatever, but he also has covered up all the kinds of pedophilia, just like everybody else. I'm like,
this is part of why I don't like Catholicism.
Because, yeah. Oh, dude. You okay? Watch.
Like it's.
Go ahead.
Like, sure. Every organization that has ever had power over anyone has been involved in some amount of rape.
Yeah, because at some point.
But that's a very different thing. That's a very different thing from using the organizational's power structure to cover up the rape.
Yeah, dude.
Repeatedly, it's a very different sort of thing.
It's perfect for pedophiles, and in fact, sorry to just like harp on Louis Gay. I don't know how you feel about him and stuff, but like. If you look up
one way or the other.
If you look up Louis C.K. Catholic Church, just click on that on YouTube after this. It's the most. It's you're just watching it like, yeah, like this isn't even just a joke. Anyway, brilliant and a moral thinker that we should all utilize and maybe not just divest ourselves of because that he's not perfect. But that's a whole complicated story. I don't know how many people have really engaged. And I just like, if anyone's listening to this and you just think that like, oh, I'm horrible because I'm pretty forgiving of Louis C.K., then like, just know that there's so much more to the story than you probably know. Look into it if you want to.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of different perspectives. And it also depends on your algorithms, what Google's even going to show you, and maybe talk to some comedians about it. I don't know. But like, I just want to put that because I know like I want to be out of the closet about a lot of the stuff that I think and feel. And again, I'm very opinion fluid. And if someone comes back to me and explains to me why I actually should say fuck Louis C.K. forever and never give him another dime, please come and explain that to me. And I'm open to hearing it because there's maybe some stuff I don't know. But that's what I would just say. There's a lot of stuff you don't know either, dear listener, if you're judging people.
And also, like personally, I think that I'm very in favor of rehabilitation. I don't think anyone should have to be the person that they were on the worst day of their life forever. I think people should be allowed to grow and heal from that.
Yeah. It's like, I always just like to any of these people, it's like, do you really want to be judged for the worst thing you ever did or said? Is that how you want to be thought of? But you know, so there's this woman, Africa Brooke. I just kind of stumbled across her on Instagram, I think. And I started listening to her podcast recently, but I saw her talking, you know, to the camera, Instagram or whatever. And she's talking about how, one thing that we could call cancel culture, at least in some of its forms, is collective sabotage. And so and it's right. And so it has this thing of like, okay, right. If you are willing to throw the first stone, you are setting the precedent that will lead to the stone being thrown at you potentially, if not probably, one day. And so there's a collective sabotage where we're not allowing each other to make mistakes. We're not allowing each other to grow. We're not allowing each other to have second chances or whatever. And that is a kind of collective sabotage, what we're doing to the culture. And what it made me think was that those same sickness that we have in our culture that leads to all of our self-sabotage, all of our self-hatred, all of our depression and anxiety, all this kind of stuff, it would make sense that we have this on a collective level and that there's a part of these people in throwing these stones that I think they actually want to be canceled themselves. I think we all have a little bit of a collective, the same way we can have these collective death wishes. I think we all have a little bit of a collective cancel me daddy wish because what could be more freeing than, you know, like, does anyone not want that thing where you have to put away your phone and just go walk in the woods and be with your loved ones, the people around you who actually love you? And now you're like, I want to walk away from Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and, you know,
yeah.
It makes sense that actually on a deeper unconscious level, the people who are canceling people, you know, you always go, do you really want this to be turned against you? Do you want the mob to turn against you one day, you dumbass? And it's like, yes, they do. I think that's what's really going on, is that they do want it to be turned against them one day. They actually have a lot of guilt. They actually have a lot of pain. They actually have a lot of anxiety around everything that's happening on the internet. And the best thing that could happen to them on some level would be to get canceled, so that one, they could feel important and special too, and have their own transformation and whatever, but also to have that feeling of like just taking your phone and throwing it out of a high story, you know, building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being canceled in some ways did actually improve my life. It meant that all of the fake friends, I guess, that I accumulated over the years just sort of disappeared. And like, you know, the people that I could actually trust were the only ones who were remaining. And this has really decreased my anxiety, because like, I know that the people around me aren't going to hurt me for it anymore. Mm. You know, like the people around me either like know, or they've already heard these accusations and think they're false, but have still explicitly told me, even if they're true, I wouldn't hate you for it. Or that sort of thing. Like, and that feels a lot more safe than just having a bunch of friends who would potentially seriously try to hurt me if they knew the truth about me.
Yeah.
You know? What's okay. It? And like, I don't even do anything bad.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, no, I have social media, but it's not connected to me. You know, like, it's not, I don't put selfies up. I don't connected to my real life identity, because like the few bits of social media I have are like a privated Twitter, you know, like yeah. things that aren't, because I don't know, I don't want to be unsafe. I like being safe. This is probably the most dangerous thing I've done in years.
Yeah. Okay, so 9 to 14 year olds, and that's an interesting age. That's the Michael Jackson age, I would say. Right.
I kind of haven't really looked much into his proclivities.
He would gather them when they were in that cute little child age like that. And yeah. then, you know, befriend them and stuff. And then it seemed like he would wait until they were like kind of around puberty to start being like, hey, can we like, can I smell your butt and stuff? And yeah. And then kind of then that's the thing. It's like, so part of, I think, what was so hard for these kids, I mean, I don't know what it would be like to be like molested in the way Michael Jackson molested them, or like asked them to do this, that, whatever. But it's also that like, he was their sugar daddy boyfriend experience too, like this man. And then he's just done with them. That's the thing about like a lot of the pedophile people who like aren't really attracted to the older people, and or it's not the yeah, same kind of
it's,
thing.
It's,
like
it's they're, cruel,
they're done.
You know?
They're done with you when you're 15, or whatever it is. And so, I think unless you have that little kid look that stays for a long time, right? So, like, I kind of would just be heartbroken for these boys on a level. I'm like, they got their hearts broken.
Yeah,
you know,
they did.
That's by this. Can you imagine if the biggest star in the world brought you out and did a Star Is Born type thing with you, where you get out on stage and then he's your, and you go to the fun land all the time with I feel like the hardest part on these kids, one is looking back later and being like, what did my parents sign me up for? And how much did they know about all this shit? What was that?
I think the entertainment industry is like just evil.
The entertainment industry and them just like being like, I'm sure this Michael Jackson thing is fine. We're benefiting from it. You know, like having to see that from your parents, but then also just like literally when these pedophiles are done with your age, when you age out, like they this just, is, yeah.
This is part of why I'm glad that I am also into adults. And I've given advice to people who are exclusively into kids before. And I've actually helped several exclusive pedophiles get into adults. Attraction to adults is
so wait. So you're pro conversion therapy?
No, ding, 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 no, 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 no. This is a very different thing.
No, that's a type of conversion therapy, right?
Okay, so the way that I look at it is, I've also helped people shift, not shift, but add things to their sexuality,
sure.
I should say. Like, what's it? I've helped quite a number of people become androphilic, like into men, who previously were exclusively gynophilic.
Interesting. Why are you doing that?
Well, because it's nice. Being into men is fun. And it's not like I'm doing this against their will.
No, they're coming to you. Like, this is like your side job now.
It's not a job. It's a thing I do for fun.
You're a conversion therapist.
Kind of.
You could help. You should team up with the Christians.
God, no.
Like you could help them.
I have a very different goal from them. In my, what I'm trying to say is, what in my experience, it is much easier to add things to someone's sexuality than to take something away from it. It's much easier to make someone become bisexual than it is to make someone shift from being gay to straight or straight to gay.
Yeah, that makes
sense. It's much easier to get them to being bi.
Yeah.
Because to add something to their sexuality is just helping them enjoy more things.
Are these chicks or dudes? Sorry, go ahead.
It's mostly trans women that I've helped with this.
To become attracted to men as well as women?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
I've helped a few cis men as well do this.
So I think that like there are definitely, I've heard of like, you know, trans people who, especially before physical transitioning, they couldn't really be attracted to their birth sex because it bummed them out. So then it's like you'd have to kind of get comfortable with stuff to be able to, not just be bummed out by.
Personally, I experienced a similar shift. But some people want to speed that up or encourage it or make it happen when they're not medically transitioning or that sort of thing. And there's ways to do that basically by just sort of like gradually increasing your interest in like very feminine trans women and then moving to like femboys and then moving to twinks and then eventually moving to mask men if you really want to do that. And a few other things. But also I've had, but back to the topic we were previously discussing, I've had a surprising amount of success convincing previous exclusive pedophiles to become into adults just by being flirty with them.
Yeah.
Since, you know, I'm an adult.
Yeah. I see. Yeah. So maybe some of these people are just stuck in a thing where they don't know how to flirt with adults. And if you don't know how to flirt with adults, then adults don't flirt back with you. And then you don't get into a feedback loop of attraction. Whereas with children, they kind of know how to do that creepy manipulative thing where you get a child to like you, but they don't figure out adult ways.
None of the people I'm talking about are molesters.
Gotcha.
These are people who, wanted to become attracted to adults because they didn't want to do anything to kids. You know, I have spoken to child molesters before, very rarely. They generally don't get along with me very well.
Yeah.
Most of the pedophiles I have spoken to are people who have not hurt kids and do not want to hurt kids.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I don't know, if you woke up tomorrow attracted to children, you probably would not want to hurt kids.
Yeah.
I would assume. And most people do not have much difficulty avoiding hurting kids. Like, I don't know, you probably don't have much difficulty avoiding raping people that you're attracted to.
Yeah.
It's just not generally not even a thing that comes to mind. You know, like when you see someone who's attractive, you generally don't go, should I rape them?
Certainly I don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't speak for everyone, but I assume, it's not common. Okay. But so like when you say you're attracted to these kids, right? Like when I like, just walk me through how that attraction feels. Like, are you actually attracted to their bodies?
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's the part where I'm like, okay, good. I'm not a pedophile then. Like, there's a part of me that could understand, like, if I try to walk myself through it, I could understand why it would be thrilling to have a child like look up to you in a certain way and like
also part of it.
Yeah, I have this kind of like I like it when, like, I always joke about, I'm like, I want everyone to be attracted to me. I doesn't, you know, men, women, children, everyone, you know, like, I'm not going to fuck the men either. Like, it's not about that, but I want you to be into me. And
it's nice.
Yeah. So I think having that, and if the child is one of those really cute kids where you know, that feels better if that gets into you. It's one of those cute ones. You know what I mean? I've tried to walk myself down as far as this as I could go, basically. And it's like, I could see how it would feel nice to have like this kid who, like in the Lolita world, like I read a book to the kid and they have a little crush on you and that seems cute, whatever. But where I just can't go any further is like, yeah, but their boobs are all, yeah, you know what I mean? There's nothing, it's, yeah.
Well, in that case, you're probably not into children.
Yeah, which is nice. That's nice.
I would say the, at least not physically. I mean, yeah. I would say the majority of gynophilic pedophiles that I know are very into flat chests.
I don't even like that on adult women. You know, it's like a deal breaker.
I mean, it's to each their own.
Yeah. Okay.
What's but it? So, one of the things that you said before that really convinced me that this would be a good idea to have to actually go for this interview was when you were talking about how pedophiles should be able to have access to early transition trans women so that they could have ethical access to early Tanner stages.
Yeah, yeah. And, that's Ava's joke, really. But Ava talks about how you could use, transitioning trans women who are on the titty skittles, right, on estrogen pills, so you have those teen girl boobs. She calls it like a methadone clinic type service.
This is the thing I've enjoyed myself, and when I was earlier in transition about myself, and this is the thing I've enjoyed with trans women that I have known. But
okay, so that brings us into this is like y'all are using each other as child sex dolls.
The mental model of TERFs in my mind is like cackling right now.
I mean,
even
if it was like a dude, cis dude, pedophile, whatever, who was using trans women in this way, would still be using
There are definitely cis guy pedophiles I know who date trans women for this reason.
That's funny. Oh, we just like joking about it as a service. But yeah, of course, like it's not just these people who we think of as, tranny chasers, if you'll allow me the old term. But like some of them are just
into
pubescent boobs. Who even knows? That's so crazy.
And a lot of legal age, but still younger transitioner, trans women, 20-ish-year-olds, they do look much younger than they actually are.
Yeah.
You know, like 15-ish even. But
my trans boyfriend was 27 at the time, but I mean, he seemed like a little teenage boy. That was part of cute. I mean, it was cute at first because I was like, this works because I'm in my sexual peak, my early 30s, and I'm horny as fuck. And so dating this like teenage boy sex drive thing makes sense. But then I think he just kind of became too much like a teenage boy for me. I was like, actually, I'm not.
That's fair. I mean,
that's like the worst. That's the worst possible demographic is teenage boys for me. Like I send them all to boarding school, I say, but.
Oof.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll agree with that one.
Sure. But I mean, yeah.
I do quite like teenage boys.
Yeah. Wait, but you also have a drop off where like 9 to 14 seems to be your like pedophile range, but
it is somewhat of a drop off. Like,
because then you're more attracted
than that. As it gets younger than that, it's more of a drop off, and then it's a little bit of a drop off after like 14-ish to like
15 to like 20.
Until it gets to like 18-ish, and then it goes back up again. You know?
But you're pretty into like 19-year-olds and stuff.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah. I mean, I don't generally, like, at least physically, I don't generally go after teenagers because, they're not great romantic partners usually.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I think
there are some teenagers who are good romantic partners, but they're few and far between.
Yeah. I'm just realizing for my own, like, the way my attractions work and stuff, it's like, oh, yeah, because there are 19-year-old girls that are very cute and whatever, but usually they're not. Still maybe not as developed, or if those ones and I'm like, well, like the reality is like, I like that look for me. I think that's one of those, like, I'm attracted to, when you kind of, do I want to fuck that or do I want to look like that? And so but it's also like, I like a thin look. Like, I don't want to fuck that, but I want to be that. Like, I don't want to have boobs and ass and whatever, I like that. So I'm like, oh, okay. Makes sense. the cute, you know, 19-year-olds who are like all thin and can wear clothes in a certain way. I don't, there's a certain androgyny that will happen. And like, I'm just realizing like, oh yeah, I'm not really attracted. Cause I've tried to date some quite young women, like in terms of like 22-ish or whatever, who hit on me. And, and it often, like, it hasn't gone that I finally realized like, oh, I'm not really attracted to that sexually. It's just, I just am attracted. I can, you know, there's a different kinds of attraction. Like, I still want to hang out with you, maybe even cuddle or whatever, but I just don't want to have sex with you. So I'm like, yeah, do you believe in a world where like you could have relationships with children where you were able to have close friendships and cuddle or whatever, but just that you would never have sex?
I think it's definitely possible. I think it is definitely possible to have close relationships with children without hurting them.
Yeah.
You know? Like I think children do deserve to have, like, you know, real relationships with older people.
Yeah, not, it's good, like, for them.
As long not as necessarily they're... like, not necessarily like sexual relationships, but, you know, like, it's
even romantic, but just
to have older mentors.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say most of the people that I have dated throughout my life have been between 5 to 10 years older than me. Mm-hmm. I would say, like, the overwhelming majority. I think I've only dated people who are younger than me, like, twice. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's been very helpful for me to date people who are like at a later stage in life, who could help me through the problems that I was working through. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I mean, even I just, like I'm saying, even aside from even dating, I think friendships between adults and children can be really valuable and helpful. And
I think the fear of pedophilia has really destroyed a lot of opportunity for that.
Yeah.
Like, even though, you know, most child molestation happens from parents, and most people's parents are not their friends, which is really sad, because, like, that sort of thing, it would be nice if that sort of thing could happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, so, okay. So you say there's maybe a little bit of drop off after, in just in terms of you not being that attracted to the hebephile range or whatever, where
hebephilia range.
Hebephilia is the word, like, teenager. Is that?
Yeah.
Hebephilia is teenager. So there's somewhat of a drop off. Well, cause I just am like, the opportunity to have a trans woman who is attracted to kids, the one question I have to ask is, how do you feel about puberty blockers?
I don't think I know enough about the medical stuff in order to say anything either way. I think, like, I've heard a lot of conflicting information on, like, side effects and whatnot. Yeah. I think if the fear-mongering there is actually false, like I've seen some people claim, then I think everyone should probably be on puberty blockers until they're old enough to decide which puberty they want to go through.
You think everyone should be on puberty blockers? Let me just delay everyone's puberty.
I mean, potentially. I think most people are probably cis. But, like,
I like how you're like, don't pierce your baby or circumcise or whatever, but let's put all children on puberty blockers.
This entirely depends on the side effect. On the side effects. I'm not really seriously looking into this.
Some things I've heard. Just, I mean, there's something about bone density. There's something about, like, bone density less, and there's something about psychosocial dynamics where everybody else is going through puberty and you're not. Although it would fix it if we put all kids on puberty blockers. But the thing that has stuck out to me the most is that for penis people, for AMABs or however you want to put it, if you don't go through puberty, your dick doesn't grow as big, so that you're not gonna be able to, like, make a vagina as successfully. And I think that
there is a way around this, though.
Okay.
What's it? If you
penis can, donors.
Oh, if only. No.
Well, I always joke that if I ever get a dick attached, I'm getting a black one. But I just need leg skin. I just need leg skin from a black dude. You know, he doesn't have to die. I just need 9 or so inches of thighs. Anyway, go on.
No, that's great. What was I saying? You can fix that. You can fix that with topical testosterone gel just on your dick.
Okay, so wait. You go do the puberty blockers, and then you transition.
You can localize puberty just in that area.
What? So how come we're not just making everyone's dick bigger with testosterone? You know what I mean? All these guys.
It doesn't generically make everyone's dick bigger.
All right, just if you haven't gone through puberty, you can't go through puberty.
If you haven't gone through puberty.
Okay. So you're saying.
If rubbing testosterone on your dick made it get bigger.
Yeah, everyone
there would be an even bigger black market for testosterone
I've had some friends try it. Yeah. Apparently, I think he rubbed it on his balls once. And I think he rubbed progesterone on his balls on accident. And he was hard for like a long time. Anyway.
Progesterone is incredible. If you're listening to this and you are a trans woman, I want you to try shoving a full gram of progesterone up your ass and just see how you feel. It'll be really fun. Trust me.
Would you have to be a trans woman or can I shove it up my
I don't
ass
know about the... this. No. I think you could try it.
All right. We snort it? Or...
You know, for me, I know the reason I'm saying taking it rectally is because taking it rectally is a full order of magnitude more effective than taking it orally.
Yeah.
So you know, if you take I don't know if you can smoke it. Maybe that would be really fun. I think everything should be vapable. I think we should be able to have vapable estradiol. That would be amazing.
Okay, so yeah, we put all the kids on puberty blockers at 11 or 12, depending, and then you start putting them on whichever cross-sex hormones, or you let their own. You decide later, and then you rub. When do you do the testosterone cream? But before
whatever they want, really, like. The whole point of this is to let the children decide their own bodies.
Okay. Nature doesn't get a say, and neither do your parents.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Like you should be able to. I think I firmly believe is that you should have full control over your own body.
What age do you think that kids are old enough to know what sex they want to be for the rest of their life? That's the thing. Because people
totally
change their minds.
On them.
People change their minds. And it's also, it's like, it doesn't seem to be just like in the genes. Like you just are trans.
I don't think the puberty blockers for every child is like a reasonable suggestion.
Okay.
I think it's a fun suggestion though. Because
I do like it.
A lot of people seem to act like offering puberty blockers to trans children is like somehow going to convince them to transition.
Well, there are studies. And I mean, it is a thing because it's like psychological. If you start going down a path, it's going to feel weird to go back. Also, I mean, just even socially, like you told everybody all this shit, you know, but also just physically, like, I think it's like, you know, when people get a tattoo, you know, their second and then 18th tattoo is coming quickly down the pike because it's a cognitive dissonance thing. You can't let yourself think that that was a bad idea because then it's forever. And you're going to feel so stupid. And so you're going to convince yourself you love that tattoo, even if it's an ugly ass tattoo. Right. So I think for people, if you take, and before you know it, a lot of people are addicted to just getting more and more tattoos. Anyway, so I think, not that this is a perfect analogy, but I think if you start taking puberty blockers, there's a pretty strong cognitive, social thing that's going to happen where you're not going to be like, well, I mean, at least in the studies that I've heard about, almost everybody goes on to take cross-sex hormones, but the studies are so few and there's so few people and they're not very well done on any of these.
I think that children should just be allowed to go through whichever puberty they want at the same time as their peers.
If they say it, but so like, what if the kid has a bunch of other mental disorders and we haven't really sorted out yet whether they're just kind of schizophrenic? Because sometimes there's like really autistic kids who...
Well, I know a lot of schizophrenic trans women, and I think that they'd probably be happier if they'd gotten to transition earlier, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know.
I think so, at least.
Yeah, but it's hard because we always then have these confirmation biases, right? Because some people are happy and they wish they would have transitioned earlier, but then we've got now that transition is more medicalized, transition is more common. We also having more people detransition or people going kind of, oh, maybe I'm trans, maybe I'm non-binary. There's that. Like, so
to me,
we're not really sure yet.
To me, I think that the number of people who detrans is just going to increase and that this isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Well, some of them are famous on YouTube too.
The number of people who detrans is just going to increase, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing because for every one person who's detransing, there's almost certainly a significantly larger number of people who are transing, medically and are happy with it.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, and but it I does that seem that is, to be I think a little that bit...
is overall worthwhile.
So it does seem to be skewed where more vagina-born people are detransitioning than penis-born. And it used to be, of course, like it was mostly only the trans people. It used to mostly only be a MABs that were transitioning. And now we have a lot more teen AFABs. And I think some people's concern there is also that this is chicks can get really into fads, whether it's cutting or eating disorders or, and you know, they hate their bodies. They hate men's attention. They don't know what to do. Testosterone is a fun drug. And so it concerns me. Testosterone
is way more permanent than estrogen.
Yeah. Because you can't, I mean, yeah, exactly.
There's a problematic solution to this, which is to apply significantly more medical gatekeeping to AFABs than to AMABs.
And right. And then how do you deal with that?
I don't want to really seriously suggest that. Like that seems cruel. Okay.
So in terms of puberty blocking though, I think that it is an interesting difference because I think it makes more sense to puberty block the penis kids because you can't go back because as I put it, we're all born female. And at some point you either get enough testosterone to masculinize or not, born female, but we all start female, in the womb, And so once you've already masculinized, you can't really go back in the same way. That's why it's a bunch more surgeries, facial feminization, and you're never going to have the hips and your lungs are always going to be, there's all kinds of things.
There are certainly problems that, AFAB trans people face as well, for example, but, those are fixable by things that aren't puberty blockers. Like you can help them grow taller through what is it?
Eating carrots,
GnRH inhibitors, or whatever
broccoli,
they are.
Broccoli, I don't know. Yeah, okay.
No, there's chemicals that help them not fuse their growth plates as early.
So I think puberty blockers were a solution that was mostly meant for AMABs because, you know, once you have the Adam's apple, once you've gone through male puberty, you can't. It's so much harder to pass.
It is.
Yes, trans boys, they'll pass as soon as 3 years or so. Once you can have a beard, like most trans men are able to pass so easily, and even without, if they ever do is take testosterone, not necessarily any surgeries or anything. So I think if what we're really trying to do is with the puberty blockers is, as I put it, like I say, if we all start female and then the people who masculinize, it's like, it's harder to put the genie back in the bottle, right? Indeed. Once you've gone to nom, you can never have not been to nom. Okay.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Whereas the trans dudes can go to nom, if you will. It's just like, I don't know why I really like that analogy because I think you testosterone, you see some things if you go through the testosterone.
I don't know. Obviously I'm biased against testosterone personally, mm-hmm. but I think that, you know, it should still be available for trans men, obviously. But I do think you're right in a lot of this. I don't know a way to implement this with the current political stuff. Well,
what's funny is what we've stumbled upon is a sex difference, not a gender difference, but a sex difference that requires us to realize, hey, men, women, penis people, vagina people, intersex people, everybody is created equal in the sense of worth, and we have strengths and weaknesses, and it's all spectrum-y, and it's all kinds of stuff, non-binary, and in terms of the ways things express are complicated and whatever. But we should potentially have a different policy for AFABs versus AMABs because puberty blocking for AMABs makes so much more sense in a cost-benefit analysis in terms of whether you're more likely to stick with it in terms of cost-benefit analysis for what you get from it than puberty blocking for AFABs does. Right? Yeah. And I think that's one of those things where it's like, let's stop talking about these people. And because people got uncomfortable speaking clearly, like it was about 2017 that I feel like there was a real shift. And especially in the years since then, where we're not allowed to just speak explicitly in a way that makes sense, like in terms of the trans stuff, because at one point we could talk about, oh, well, that woman is male or that man is female. And then everyone's like, well, that hurts our feelings. Can you please not do that? And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, but so you're biologically male.
It's easier to do that when it's just a bunch of trans people talking amongst ourselves. It's harder when it's cis people trying, like explicitly trying to say ban HRT or whatever. use them.
Yeah.
Or like, I did want to talk to you about something that you were talking about in a previous podcast where you said you wanted people to argue with you about it. What's it? The transports thing.
Okay.
I have a solution.
Okay. Y'all, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope that you got something out of it and you don't think that we're just evil for even having it, but I don't know why you're still listening if you do. Anyway, if you want to respond to anything that we said in particular or in general, if you want to come on the podcast already, I mean, you haven't even heard the second half, which will come out next week, where we do have a lively debate about sports. So I thought it was really fun. And we talked about a bunch of other stuff too. I mean, we had a great conversation for 2.5 hours. And so you can wait to respond until next week, really. But if you're already itching to tell me what I got wrong, you can reach out to me at ellendegenderless on Instagram or ellendegenderless@gmail.com. And just to recap some of the things that you might want to have some kind of contention with, we talked about puberty blockers for everyone, although she did say that she was kidding about that idea, but we had a lot of ideas in there that you might want to take exception to, like, should we give puberty blockers to all kids, or should we give puberty blockers only to AMABs, or should we, maybe more realistically, should we have a different set of guidelines, if not laws, for AMAB puberty blocking versus AFAB puberty blocking. And that's, for anyone who doesn't know, that's AMAB is assigned male at birth and AFAB is assigned female at birth. That's the lingo that the trans orthodoxy likes to use. A lot of people have issues with it because they don't agree that it's just an assignment, but it's all kind of complicated and there's no real perfect way to say any of this. Well, not that I've found. I mean, you can trip over yourself and talk about people having smaller or larger gametes or having bodies organized to potentially make babies one way or another, whatever. But anyway, that's just what that means. Okay. Another controversial thing we talked about, I would say, is that should kids have the legal right to leave their parents' homes, or should they have that right at the age of 8, or how would we do that? I mean, we definitely could have better systems set up just for kids who do need to not live in their parents' homes, because the foster system is a piece of shit for the most part on every end. Or should kids be allowed to opt out of certain things that their parents want them to do, whether that's religious practices or, you know, just maybe sports or whatever. Your parents force you to do all kinds of things. And at what age should kids be able to say no to some of that stuff on a legal level? I don't. Should there be, should circumcision just be illegal? At least if it's not part of your religion, you know, I mean, we have religious exemptions for things like taking mescaline, although I think we should all be able to take mescaline and ayahuasca and whatnot. But should circumcision be something that, I mean, that's something I talk about in my quote unquote religion, is that I don't think that you should choose circumcision for anyone else. Even if you are Jewish or whatever, then you could choose. I think, you know, again, we have really good anesthesia nowadays. Then why not just wait until you're older and like let that be something that you choose for yourself? So if you want to come on, and also, I mean, I guess another controversial thing we kind of talked about was we glanced onto the, you know, pedophiles using child sex dolls, pedophiles enjoying the bodies, the transitioning bodies of trans people as they grow, you know, breasts, and you have these like teenage looking and feeling breasts. We really stumbled upon this. It didn't occur to me until listening to it as I'm editing it, that what she's talking about in this, when she's growing, she said when she's even growing her own kind of pubescent boobs, and she was enjoying them. And so I was like, damn, what we stumbled on is autogynepedophilia, which, yeah, there's a lot of people probably, if we don't let them get a hold of this episode, because there are some people who are just too gender critical to handle that. But that's hilarious and maybe a great solution. Again, look, this podcast, that my guest and I are both 100% against adults having sex with children in any of these contexts, or at least, you know, I mean, maybe 18 and 16 is chill. Oh, and by the way, the thing about California, Canada, same difference. Okay. In Canada, I got it slightly wrong in my memory, but it is in 2008 that Canada changed its age of consent laws from 14 to 16. So now adults can have sex with 16-year-olds, but it was until 2008, it was 14-year-olds. Before that, in 1890, they changed it from 12 to 14. Anyway, just so you know. And whether you want to be on the podcast to discuss these things or you just want to share me your thoughts, that would be great. If you think we missed something or you have a better idea or this or that or the other, you can reach out. And if it is something that I think should be talked about, even if you don't want to be on the podcast, I will bring it up potentially on another episode and just kind of have a little section of listener mail where we, you know, letters to the editor, if you will, where we do that for people who don't want to spend, you know, an hour to 3 hours discussing it or publicly coming on and having, you know, your episode on here be the response to pedophilia episode. Yeah, you can also just write me and you can let me know whether you want to be mentioned by name or you want to be anonymous anytime you're writing me about any episode. Okay, so let's see. If you want to support the podcast, and please support the podcast one way or another. If you are listening to this, if you're enjoying this, if you want to just support me and my career in general as a public figure, as a comedian slash podcaster slash, you know, I do a lot of stuff, but a lot of it isn't paid or is very underpaid. And that's just kind of the state of the economy with comedians who don't have an enormous TikTok following. I'm going to work on that too. If you want to help me with TikTok, that would be one way to support me. You can always just give me advice. I generally don't know what I'm doing. And I don't know if some people think that I would be offended. Please mansplain to me or non-binary explain or whoever, whatever you are, you know, please, please help me. If you have ideas, if you're like seeing anything that I do on this podcast or in social media or anything, and you're like, this is stupid, just tell me, I would love to know. I don't understand a lot of things. So anyway, but if you want to support this podcast directly, there are so many ways to do it. Tell someone about the podcast, whether they're a friend or your mother or an enemy or your prison pen pal. Tell someone about the podcast. Our prisoner, they can listen to podcasts probably, right? Anyway. And you can share it on social media. That would be sick. Repost something that I do, make a story about it, whatever you do, you know, rate, review, subscribe on your podcast player. You can now rate podcasts on Spotify as well. So let's get that politically non-binary rating up. We have a few. I want some more. You can also support us tangibly if you go to patreon.com/politicallynb or wrongqo.substack.com. I haven't gotten around to figuring out how to change the URL for that, but that's okay. We still ask wrong questions on here. Whatever. You know, I'll get there. But you can also Venmo me at gayariel, G-A-Y-A-R-I-E-L-L-E. If you enjoy the content and you just want to support without a recurring donation, then hey, I always accept money. You can subscribe to my OnlyFans. You know, you support me in every way you want to. I really don't give a shit. I have all of these things set up so the trickles of money can come in and hopefully, you know, my OnlyFans, by the way, like sometimes I do post semi, but it's like, I don't post anything nude. And then, I mean, it's like, there might be a little bit of hints of nudity, you know, but then sometimes I posted stuff that I just wouldn't tweet in public on there. I should do that more. I like doing that where I post little jokes, but also the Patreon and Substack are, oh, and it's over Sherial. If you want to look at my OnlyFans, whatever. The Patreon and Substack, I sometimes put bonus clips from these episodes, like things that like I'm like, I don't want the public to necessarily see that. Or I might sometimes put out full episodes that I'm not releasing to the public. But lately, I found that I really enjoy putting out audio clips from my stand-up because it's like there's just – I can't always take videos of all my stand-up, but I almost always have an audio clip. And sometimes I'm like, I go off on some great riffs and I want to share that, and there's – either nowhere else really to share that, or just I really don't want the public necessarily seeing all my like thoughts on the Down syndrome Victoria's Secret model. But I like the, you know, putting in that, that's something that I can give to my patrons and subs. So patreon.com/politicallynb or wrongqo.substack.com or gay Ariel on Venmo, Cash App, R-E-L-M-R-M-N. Okay, anyway. Some people only have Cash App. You know, there could be some listener out there going, damn it, I would love to support Ariel, but I only have Cash App. Well, now you can fucking support me. R-E-L-M-R-M-N. It's like a play on Ariel Norman, but it's R-E-L Mormon. Anyway. Okay, let's see. So tell Brain for Tramp. Yeah, so if you want to be on this podcast to discuss something, whether it's you want to respond to Freddie DeBoer or you want to respond to my trans woman non-binary pedophile, or if you have a new topic that you want to argue for, then you can reach out to me at ellendegenderless on Instagram or ellendegenderless@gmail.com. Holler at me whether you want to make the case that Biden is not as incompetent as everyone says, or that Cosby's innocent. That's something, the conversation I got into recently. And you know what? Lots of things are possible, but I'm pretty convinced that Cosby is a piece of shit who should be in jail. But anyway, maybe you want to make the case, and if you write to me, then I might have you on. You can make the case for just about anything. Again, this is all politically non-binary. I am politically non-binary, and it's, you know, I'm open. I'm open. I'm fluid. Anyway. Okay, I think that sums it up. But yeah, join us next week. You're not going to want to miss any of this shit. Ooh, and thanks as ever to Coleman Wilson for the music and Caleb Sexton for the artwork.